Spirit Blade Underground, episode 462. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 462.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and like me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, a review of The Mummy, some info on, bumping my mic there. I think my settings are too loud. A review of The Mummy, and then I'm going to share some info on Christian fantasy games and books, and then I'm also going to spotlight some free geek movies as we continue celebrating the summer of free. All right, let's get into it. Okay, kiddo, pop quiz time. Best movie franchise.
The Terminator.
Not even close. The Matrix. Best TV show.
Star Trek.
Farscape. You have to know that it's Farscape. It's like you're not even my son. Unless you're not my son.
I don't like your voice. It irritates me.
Hey, wait.
Let's make another call.
No, please.
And another. You are very messy. Okay. Bye-bye.
The Mummy. The IMDb synopsis reads, though safely entombed in a crypt deep beneath the unforgiving desert, an ancient princess whose destiny was unjustly taken from her is awakened in our current day, bringing with her malevolence grown over millennia and terrors that defy human comprehension. I don't know if they defy human comprehension. Like, oh crap, bunch of crazy birds. Oh crap, bunch of... like dust blowing. So I don't know. And also, I think I might take issue with her destiny being unjustly taken from her. I think according to the laws of the land, her destiny was not taken from her unjustly. She kind of dug her own hole. I won't get into the story in case you haven't seen it yet, but I'd be curious, you know, what your thoughts are on that synopsis. I'm not sure that the unjustly part makes a lot of sense to me. Anyway, so let's talk about the story, the pacing and the tone. I wasn't sure what to expect with this. I like monster movies. I like, you know, John Carpenter's The Thing. I like Predator. I like Aliens. I like Jeepers Creepers, you know. I love finding out over the course of the movie what the nature is of this crazy monster that's hunting people down. This is not that kind of monster movie. In fact, I don't even know if I would classify it as like a monster movie that we're used to. It's more like an Indiana Jones type supernatural adventure. It's got actions and explosions and dangerous ancient supernatural powers and kind of fish out of water heroes who provide comic relief through their commentary amidst the chaos. It felt like the result of a bunch of ingredients that some suits in offices somewhere in Hollywood thought would sell well, including a self-objectifying, I think, female mummy largely used for her sex appeal rather than... I don't want to say that the choice of using a female mummy was all about the sex appeal. I think they used her a lot for that. But I did appreciate... I was like, oh, okay, this is... She had a backstory. I don't know the classic story behind the normal classic mummy monster, if there really is one, or if he's just some random... Pharaoh. I haven't seen really any of the classic movies or read any classic stories about the mummy, you know. But I, you know, I thought that her backstory was interesting. But it was a bummer that, you know, in many ways they still just used her as this self-objectifying, you know, sexualized character. The tone is visually dark. Pretty consistently, but the movie is visually dark, but the tone is a mix actually of dark and light, or dark and like fun. I never found it scary. I never felt concerned for the heroes, even when some of them die. The story felt mostly like a skeleton to just hang action scenes on top of. For me, it was a popcorn movie in the sense that the thing I enjoyed most was my popcorn. The most interesting part was the ending for me. I'm not going to give any spoilers, but it sets up future movies that may involve like good monsters, quote-unquote, like Jekyll and another one that I won't name, hunting down, quote-unquote, bad monsters, as if they're going to be like dark supernatural superheroes of some kind, you know? It felt like, you know, we'll, in the future, we'll have to band together with our monster powers to fight other monsters, you know? It was interesting, and that could work. I don't know. I'm curious to see what it'll look like. Tom Cruise's character is left in a surprising place that makes me curious what the next movie in this Dark Universe brand will be about. Speaking of Tom Cruise, he just plays his humor-flavored hero rather than, oh my gosh, I think the guy that's trimming outside is like right next to my window. He might have gone away now. That's what I get for doing these uncut. Tom Cruise plays his humor-flavored hero rather than his more serious hero character. Am I going to start shouting? Everyone else does what is asked of them, I felt like, in the movie, but the script meant that I didn't care about anyone, despite, you know, their solid performances. As far as stunts and visuals, you know, you might have seen in the trailer, there's a kind of this cool anti-gravity stunt in a plane crash sequence. There's plenty of standard quality CG in the movie, but the stunts and visuals didn't do anything to increase the intensity of the experience for me. I think they were, you know, at best just kind of like interesting to look at. Okay, so I always try to ask myself when I'm engaging in entertainment, okay, is there anything of worthwhile philosophical, moral, or spiritual significance here that might bring about worthwhile thought or conversation as a result of taking part in this? For me, I really had to be just listening and watching, you know, to see if there was anything. There was, you know, a couple minor things that aren't even worth mentioning right now, but one thing I'll mention is based on a remark that Dr. Jekyll makes. He says that the Egyptian god of death named Set is known in the Old Testament as Satan. And this is kind of like, you know, the fact that they're doing this is very much in keeping with lots of franchises like Indiana Jones or shows like Supernatural that bring together multiple monster myths into a single universe. But when doing that, because these myths are drawn from, you know, different bits of folklore and stuff like that, you usually, in order to get them all in the same continuity, have to embrace either relativism or a form of ignorant agnosticism. Again, you know, the story of these two beings, Satan and Set, if we're going to say that they are, you know, actually they're the same person, you didn't know that, but that's what's actually true. But the thing is, the story of these two beings, as explained in their respective sources, couldn't be much more different. So to believe Jekyll, we have to assume that one or both sources of info on these beings are unreliable or embrace some kind of logically self-defeating relativism. I actually think Jekyll's remark could have just been cut because so much of this movie isn't about thinking, but just kind of enjoying the spectacle of the ride, if you can enjoy that kind of thing. Now, I have no idea what your tastes are in movies, but if I were a time traveler, I would go back in time and say, Vader, skip. if anyone asks, you could try to recommend it to them if they like the tone of the Marvel movies, if they enjoy monster flicks, and if they don't need to be scared by monster flicks in order to have a good time. As for you, just wait and see what the next Dark Universe trailer looks like in this new branded continuity. And if it looks good or interesting to you, then maybe go back and watch this one first to catch up. In the meantime, maybe take that $8 you would spend on this movie in the theater and put it toward that Van Helsing Diablo clone on PS4 you've been kind of curious about. It's rated PG-13 for violence, action, and scary images, and for some suggestive content and partial nudity, which basically announced to a brief butt crack of the lady, and then, like, there's a really blink it and you'll miss, you know, kind of silhouette of her shadowed and stuff so you can't see details from profile view where she doesn't have any clothes on. I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, POSTOS, Helix Reviews, and the Retro Rewind podcast. For more information about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Rejoice, ye penny-pinching nerds! Rejoice! For this is a season unbound by our bank accounts, unfettered by fees. A legendary age of liberty. This is the summer of free!
This time, I'm going to try and help you and I get one or two free movie nights that we can enjoy this month by going to voodoo.com, VUDU.com. Now, sites like this often will kind of rotate the movies that they have on offer for free, and so I'm not sure if these movies will be available after June 2017, but they should all be available at the very least for this month. And I've got three categories of movies that I wanted to highlight. Now, there's a ton of movies that you can go to that you can watch for free. If you go to voodoo.com, you'll see a tab at the top that says Movies on Us. That's the tab that you want to click on for all their free stuff. It does come with ads, but other than that, unless it's otherwise noted, these are the unedited theatrical releases of these movies. Okay, so first, the superhero movies that I wanted to point out. These are all animated movies, and I've seen most of them. The first two are the Ultimate Avengers movies. The first one was just called Ultimate Avengers the Movie. The second one, Ultimate Avengers 2. If you've read the Ultimate Avengers comic books, then these stories will be familiar. I can't remember if Ultimate Avengers 2 draws heavily from the comics or not. It might be an original story, but Ultimate Avengers the Movie, at least for sure, is a combination of the first two big story arcs from Ultimate Avengers. And I really enjoyed those early story arcs in the Ultimates comics, and I feel like even though these aren't quite as kind of like grim and gritty as those comics, they still represent the source material really well. I especially like the Ultimate take on the Hulk and how he is just kind of a freaking monster, you know. And I don't think he gets quite as grotesque. It's been a long time. I still own these movies. It's been a long time since I watched them, though. But anyway, I just like the interpretation of that character. If you haven't ever seen these animated movies before, I would definitely recommend checking them out, especially if you're a Marvel fan. For my taste, even though the Avengers movie, like, just kind of blew me away the first two times that I watched it, it took a steep dive in my enjoyment after that. But these movies, I find, have been much more, especially the first one, Ultimate Avengers the Movie, have been much more consistent in my personal enjoyment upon repeat viewing. So definitely I recommend both of those. The next Marvel animated movie, and these are actually all Marvel animated movies, is Doctor Strange. This one was kind of inconsistent for me in terms of its pacing. I wasn't always 100% engaged, but I still enjoyed a lot of it. And I also really like magic, you know, and fantasy. And I think that's it's a neglected genre. And so even though this is modern day, you know, magic and fantasy, it still has a lot of the aesthetics of, like, you know, ancient, you know, magical cultures and fantasy and stuff like that. So if you enjoyed the Doctor Strange movie, this is, you know, a different take on the character. It's a different flavor. Generally, these animated movies are more serious than the Marvel movies. But I mean, if you found that, boy, I'm really interested in this character and I love this concept, then definitely check out the Doctor Strange animated movie. It's really solid stuff. Along the same lines, The Invincible Iron Man. Same thing for my experience. I felt like there was a little bit, maybe toward the end in the final battle and stuff, I found myself maybe a little bit bored or somehow not connecting with the intensity of the action, but so much of the movie is really strong, and you might find that it's totally consistent and in its enjoyment for you the entire way through. But yeah, another movie that I definitely recommend if you enjoy Iron Man. Very different take on the character from, you know, the Robert Downey Jr. In fact, I think this animated movie came out before the first Robert Downey Jr. animated live-action Iron Man movie. Very different take on the character. I think probably more in line with how we would typically, or at least before the live-action movies, how we would have thought of the Tony Stark character. Very enjoyable. And it's got a nice combination of, like, cell animation and computer animation that is kind of pretending to be cell animation. So in a similar way to how the Iron Giant made the Giant, all like CG animated, even though it kind of looked cell animated, to kind of have the robotic element stand out from the rest of the environment. They do some similar things in this animated movie, and I think it works really well. These last two I have not seen. Planet Hulk, I've heard nothing but good things about. When I saw that it was on here, I was like, you know, I should fire that up some night when I'm playing video games and I just kind of feel like having something else on in the background, because I've heard nothing but good things about Planet Hulk, and I haven't heard a thing about Thor, Tales of Asgard, but I thought since all these other ones are on there that I should mention that one as well. Maybe as you're kind of like getting amped up to see Thor Ragnarok, you're kind of in a Thor mood, and you might check this one out and see what it has to offer for Thor fans. All right, moving on from superheroes, a couple of horror movies that I think might be worth checking out. The first one is Monsters: Dark Continent. Now, I haven't seen this movie. I watched the trailer, and it looks like it has the same production quality probably as the first one, but I'm not sure if it's going to have the same kind of dramatic storytelling. The first movie is a quiet movie centered on a couple that are kind of I think they're like in Africa or something like that. They're not in America. They're somewhere in like a jungle, I think, and they're encountering these massive monsters. The cool thing about these monsters and how they handle them in the original movie, and by the looks of the trailer in the second movie, is they're giant. You know, not like Godzilla size, but, you know, somewhere around like some versions of King Kong. Big towering, walking above buildings and stuff. But yet they come out often at night. And they're also very quiet. And so you can be out at night where it's really in a really dark environment out loud, off the highway or something like that, where it's not lit. There's not a bunch of lights everywhere. And these things can actually sneak up on you despite being so huge. And that was really striking to me, that they would combine the whole monster sneaking up on you thing with the giant monster movie concept. I tend to like the smaller, you know, humanoid-sized monsters that can kind of chase you through corridors and stuff like that, and you learn more about them as they're revealed over time, as opposed to the giant monsters that are just hammering on buildings, and they're more like disaster movies, you know? So this seems to be kind of combining those two, or like a bridge between those two types of monster movies. And I really enjoyed the first one. I think I'm probably going to check the second one out because it looks like it's giving the same care and attention to visual effects that the first one did, to really make them look, I think, you know, to the same level as many big budget sci-fi movies. And yet you can tell it's a smaller movie, but not in the sense that it feels cheap, just in the sense that, okay, you can tell they are playing to their strengths, not to their weaknesses. It is more grounded. It is just, you know, a smaller movie, but still looks like it's really well made. Whether the story is any good or not, I have no idea, but I think I'm probably going to check that one out. One that I can vouch for, that I would put in the classic movie category. I don't know how well it would stand up today. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but that's An American Werewolf in London. And one of the reasons that this is such a classic for me is because of how it uses practical effects. This came out, like, I think in the 80s, before, you know, we had CGI, of course. And so they really used makeup effects to show, like, and there's like an iconic scene in this movie where this American traveling in London, he contracts lycanthropy, werewolfism, and the movie is about him, you know, just discovering what's happened to him and what it means to be a werewolf, and the agonizing transformation, you know, into a werewolf. And they, you know, they'll put like makeup on him, that they'll put little air bubble packs in that they can pump up so you can see his face actually growing and changing and stuff, and it's all practical, you know. And so even though you could say, oh yeah, that's just one of those like air packet things that they're using, it still doesn't look like a cartoon, because it's not a cartoon. It was filmed live right there on the set. And so anyway, for that reason alone, for someone of my you know, particular interests, this one's definitely worth checking out. Okay, and the last category is fantasy. Now, this is only for those that really like fantasy movies and are unsatisfied with how few are made. how few, like, you know, sword and sorcery or medieval style fantasy movies are made. Mythica 1 and 2, there's a fifth movie in this series that's on Kickstarter. Only the first two are available for free on Vudu. And the other one that I would point to is Dragon Age Redemption. Now, I think to enjoy movies like these, and I haven't watched these, I've seen Dragon Age Redemption, but I haven't seen Mythica 1 and 2, just the trailers. I think that the key probably to enjoying these movies for what they are is to go in and say, what if I were to travel back in time to the 90s and watch like a Xena Warrior Princess or Hercules Legendary Journeys TV show with those quality of special effects, with that kind of caliber of acting, you know, would I still be able to enjoy that experience? And would I want to watch like a TV movie that's made with that kind of budget, that kind of all-around level of quality? And if your answer to that is yes, I'll take that kind of fantasy if someone offered it to me, then these movies are probably worth checking out, because that's what they, at least the trailers for Mythica 1 and 2 and the Dragon Age Redemption movie, as I saw it, felt to me, is that they were kind of like, all these people went back in time and used the limitations of 90s television to create their movies, you know. But I would say that they take the material more seriously than Xena or the Hercules. I think there was a lot more tongue-in-cheek or just kind of like goofy types of humor in those shows, and none of that seems to be present in these. So anyway, if you're looking for kind of scratch that fantasy itch that is just unapologetically kind of D&D inspired fantasy worlds with visual effects that look straight out of 90s television and acting, you know, to boot. Even Kevin Sorbo is in Mythica 1 and 2. So if you're open to that kind of thing and you're really wanting some fantasy, then these are probably worth checking out over at voodoo.com. There's also a ton of other stuff, a bunch of other B-horror movies, a bunch of other B-fantasy movies, a bunch of other options that you can check out that are all free. These are just a few that I highlighted that I thought might be worth checking out. But I'd encourage you to go over to voodoo.com right now and see what you can find that'll maybe save you a few bucks and entertain you for an evening.
Data collection complete. Activating MusingNet 1.0.
This week at ChristianGeekCentral.com, Retro Rewind podcast number 120 has been posted, and also the Summer of Free Movie Club video featuring community discussion of Last Action Hero's spiritual themes has gone up, and then you can also find A Journey into the Long Box with Winston Crutchfield as he takes a look at He-Man and Thundercats. The audio version of that will be featured on this podcast in a couple of weeks. And then on Saturday, if you're listening to this and it is Saturday, June 10th, 2017, after about 7 a.m. Pacific time, then you should be able to find a post that details the June Summer of Free Movie Club movie, and the information, the link to where you can watch it for free, and then also a link for where you can get a free ticket to join that video, that online Google Hangout discussion. So anyway, all of that at ChristianGeekCentral.com this week. It is like a hopping place this week, and next week I think it's going to be really hopping. I have been freaking busy with E3 coming up and taking up a bunch of slots, and then I had some other like regular content that I wanted to put up, like the Christian Geek Radar and Summer of Free type stuff, and oh my gosh. This week I think I had to, I think five videos are on this the week leading up to this podcast. Five videos. One of them I think is going up Saturday, and the other one maybe Sunday. But usually I only have to prep one or two per week, and holy crap. And those are often ones that don't require, you know, they're just my movie reviews, you know, that don't require any video editing. But oh my gosh, we had, let me tell you, at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral this week, you can find my Horizon Zero Dawn. It's the third part in my Horizon Zero Dawn series where I take a look at the themes of that very popular PS4 exclusive open world action RPG. And this one, which I predicted would get some more traffic than the others. In this episode, I talk about what I would call the unintended anti-gay agenda that's in the game. I think there's a key kind of like a side quest that you can participate in, where I think the intention there, if anything, is to promote a tolerance or to create a sense of normalcy regarding homosexuality. But what they actually do, I think, the net result is something that's only going to fuel the fires of tension and conflict between those that are part of religious communities, such as Christians, who believe that homosexuality is not God's intended design for humans, and those that are part of the LGBT community. I looked at this scene and this interaction, and I was like, this is not going to help, guys. This is not going to help. I mean, it's propping up maybe what the LGBT community wants to kind of promote, the ideas that they would want to promote, but it is doing nothing to help the conversation and reconciliation between parties that disagree on this issue. So anyway, you can get my thoughts on that as I kind of talk about why I think that's the case, and more thoughts related to that issue by checking out that video, Horizon Zero, an unintended anti-gay agenda, Horizon Zero Dawn's themes, part 3, at youtube.com/christiangeekcentral. Also, my video should be up by now for about free geek movies that you can take advantage of this month. Also, part 9 of my Gloomhaven solo board game playthrough series, in which I just have some explosive mouth-spitting sound effects, role-playing moments. Having a lot of fun, I would say, like, editing that series and putting it out there, but it is coming to an end. This is the penultimate episode. I recently realized my time with the game was going to be coming to an end, and you're going to find out why as I express I don't want to say strong personal opinions, but certainly decisive. You know, it's just like, well, this is where I'm at with this game now, guys. And that'll be in episode 10, but part 9 is up this week on our YouTube channel. And then The Mummy review should be up by the time that you're listening to this. And then lastly, on Saturday sometime, the Christian Geek Radar content that is a part of this episode of the podcast, the video version of that will be going up sometime on Saturday. So anyway, like I said, lots of stuff. The YouTube channel, my gosh. I mean, this podcast episode isn't super inflated because a good amount of the YouTube stuff is not doubling being used also here on the podcast, but holy crap, I have been busy, my gosh. And then next week is E3, which I'm going to love, but I will really enjoy slowing down a little bit after that. Anyway, while you're at on our YouTube channel, if you're over there, if you want to like, share, and subscribe, that would be just a great way that you could help to raise awareness of both the YouTube channel and Christian Geek Central as a whole. This month, I sent out the audio journal entries and the exclusive content to Spirit Blade Insiders. And in my audio journal entries covering the month of May, I think out loud about where to take the YouTube channel and the fate of the Gloomhaven solo playthrough series. I kind of go into some details about my thoughts on that and why I am doing what I'm doing with it and ending it when I'm ending it. May didn't result in much forward motion on Pilgrim's Progress, but it's been good to settle into my new office space and gear up for some of the events of the summer. But not everything was sunshine and roses in May, and you'll hear about that in this month's collection of audio journal entries if you're a Spirit Blade Insider. You'll also be getting the Tully Files, where Mike Tully, the voice of Rand Galvanic, and I talk about the state of superhero movies, and that was recorded before the release of Man of Steel. This was when he was out recording for Spirit Blade World of Shadows years ago, before the release of Man of Steel. We talk about our thoughts on the state of superhero movies and where we want to see them go. So that's a little bit of time capsule opinions from Peter Franson and Mike Tully. We also talk about our various tricks and techniques for acting, some of which are, at least in my case, kind of weird. And, I'll just let you insiders find out the details on that. And then we also talked a little bit about being authentic as worship leaders. So anyway, there's always, my intent is always to put out some interesting content, some extra behind-the-scenes stuff for Spirit Blade Insiders. I want to thank the Spirit Blade Insiders so much for their support of me and this work. If you'd like info about becoming a Spirit Blade Insider, you can visit our About page at spiritblade.com. All right, now is the part of the podcast where I need to go a little bit NPR on you and quiet things down so my wife doesn't hear me. I've mentioned this before, but as kind of one of the last things in celebration of the 10-year anniversary of Spirit Blade Productions, I would really love for my wife, Holly, to hear from those of you for whom Spirit-Led Productions or Christian Geek Central has meant something unique or special. The only way I've been able to do what I'm doing for the last 10 years is because my wife works in a job that she really gets no sense of satisfaction from, and sometimes it's really hard. In fact, recently some changes have come about that have brought some pretty heavy stress into her life, and you know, by connection mine as well, but I, only as someone who cares for her. I mean, it's not a good situation, and so I thought, boy, all the more reason that I would love for her to just get some encouraging thank yous for making all of this possible. And so anyway, I would love it if I've heard from a few of you, and that's been wonderful. And my plan is to collect all the messages that I get from you guys and present them all to her at once. And so the deadline is Sunday, June 25th. If you would like to just share some a thank you of some kind to Holly and express to her what Spirit-Led Productions or Christian Geek Central have meant to you, feel free to share a personal story if you'd like. I'm not going to be sharing any of these messages online anywhere. They're just going to be private messages that you and Holly and I will read. So you can send those to my email address, paeter@spiritblade.com. But please do go ahead and just address them to my wife, to Holly, as you write. So anyway, that would just be a wonderful thing that I would love to encourage her with. So I hope you'll consider being a part of that if you feel like that that would be appropriate for you. What else? I think that's it. Okay, on to the next thing.
Scanning for Christian Geeks. Subject located. Verifying status. Christian Geek status verified. Begin data transmission.
First off, on this segment, I've been promoting Rise of the King once or twice, and so I wanted to update you guys on that game. It did make it to Steam Greenlight, but during the funding of the project, they kind of saw the signs and in their recent newsletter said waving the white flag was their subject, and they just explained that they've decided to cancel the Kickstarter and kind of take a step back from the project and take another run at it or something else. They explained, in general, we rushed the Kickstarter and should have taken more time before going live. We also realized some confusion in the pitch and needed further clarification. Lots of people just wanted to see more, and we totally understand that. We've learned a lot from the process and feel at peace with the result. So in moving forward, we've decided to cancel the funding for the Kickstarter. It's just not the right timing for Rise of the King to exist. So we're going to take a break, put Rise of the King on the shelf, and regroup. We also realized the need to lower scope and focus on something more manageable for a small development team, which wouldn't require such a high level of funding and high level art pipeline. So we will be shifting efforts over the coming months to a new, smaller, but cool project, and can't wait to show you. We're more dedicated than ever to prove to you all that we can develop quality games and create fresh, engaging experiences. Thank you again so much for all your support. That's a little bit of a bummer news. I'm sure it's really disappointing for them. I want to tip my hat to them for just kind of recognizing the signs for what they were and taking a step back and saying, you know, let's adjust what we're shooting for here so that we can hit something that's going to be more attainable and that we can still do with excellence. That's one of the reasons early on that I myself chose to go with audio drama as a medium for creating entertainment rather than, say, film or something else that would require far more resources or that wouldn't play to my personal strengths as much. And so I think this is a really cool kind of way to respond to circumstances like this, to kind of take a step back and say, okay, now we've learned some things, and let's tackle something that's going to play to our strengths even more. All right, well, this is a new author to me that I want to introduce you guys to. That's Catherine Jones Payne, who just recently released the novel Breakwater. This is, I believe, her premier work, and the description for it reads, "A red tide is rising. As the daughter of one of the Mayor King's trusted advisors, 17-year-old Jade has great responsibilities. When her fiancé murders a naiad, plunging the underwater city of Thessaloniki into uproar, tensions surge between the mayor and the naiads. Jade learns too late that the choices she makes ripple further than she'd ever imagined. And as she fights against the tide of anger in a city that lives for scandal, she discovers danger lurking in every canal, imperiling her family and shattering the ocean's fragile peace. Can the city's divisions be mended before the upwelling of hate rips apart everything Jade loves? So that's Breakwater, just recently released by Catherine Jones Payne, you can go to her website at Catherine Jones, spelled with a C there, Catherine Jones, and then the last name Payne, PAYNE.com, CatherineJonesPayne.com. Let's see here. This is an author I've known about for a while, but I wanted to just go ahead and take a moment and promote him, and that's Mark Schooley, Mark Schooley, who you can find more information about at Mark, and that's spelled with a C, so we've got some C spellings. Maybe that's the theme of this radar segment. I have no idea what I'm doing. Okay, Mark Schooley, M-A-R-C, and then school, like S-C-H-O-O-L-E-Y, markschooley.com. And he seems to be focusing on kind of like paranormal with some modern stories and some alternate history type stuff. His most recent one is called Night Riders, and it reads, oh, this is kind of like a Western. Mac Cavanaugh claims to be a night rider, one of a band of infamous Texas outlaws from the late 1800s. Except he says they wasn't outlaws, just men trying to make things right in the unjust fields of Texas, the killing fields. So begins a tale of the last years of the Texas Wild West, of oncoming civilization and all its savagery, a last ride by five vigilantes in the name of God, and a final confrontation with an evil unbound by time or place. So that's Night Riders by Mark Schooley. You can find that and several other works of his over at markschooley.com. Let's see. This is one that I wanted to highlight for a while. That's the Holy Lands RPG. This is a paper and pencil RPG. This thing has been around for a long time and has only kind of picked up steam and grown in its community and the people that are playing this game. And it was created basically as kind of an alternative to mainstream medieval fantasy paper and pencil RPGs. The description reads here, I'll just read some of this description here on their website. Their website, by the way, is HolyLandsRPG.com. And the description reads, Holy Lands RPG may very well be unlike any other game you have ever played before. Holy Lands is the Christian RPG. It's the medieval pen and paper adventure game that puts your characters against the demons, devils, and sorcerers who want to destroy the medieval church. You must use your character's prowess, wits, and faith to fight the evil enemies of God and the enemies of the medieval kingdoms. Are you up for the challenge? Find out in this smart and fast-paced game of faith and adventure. Let's see here. Another kind of like detail. This is set in kind of like an alternate history medieval world, so that it can do a couple of things. One, kind of play around with supernatural evils in a way that they didn't exist in history, but that will kind of scratch that fantasy itch. So they're having demons and kind of like creatures that serve evil that are kind of interacting with the characters in the physical world in the way that you would experience in fantasy, you know, RPGs that where you're fighting orcs and stuff like that. But all the monsters that you're fighting are all like evil, completely fallen, and as I understand it, completely unredeemable creatures. They are just evil to their core, you know. And so that's where you can kind of like, you know, do the kind of stereotypical combat moves and use all your like deadly skills against those creatures, whereas humans, they really are steering player characters away from the kinds of things that you would find in a D&D game, where maybe you're playing characters that are not necessarily noble or, you know, making the right choices or motivated by the right things all the time. It's also kind of an alternate history in the sense that they want to use like kind of the trappings of the medieval period, but not like some of the bad theology and just the corruption that was going on in the church at that time. And so it's kind of a version of medieval Christianity that's alternate history in the sense that it takes out all the crap that happened that basically necessitated some kind of reformation. Anyway, they make note here, another important aspect of Holy Lands is that it deals directly with the biblical principles of sorcery, selfish gain, and cruelty being evil. Where other games encourage the characters to use magic and undiscriminating violence whenever possible, Holy Lands separates these as the fruits of those devoted to furthering evil. It emphasizes that human life, even those devoted to furthering evil, is to be protected and saved eternally at any cost, and violence to mankind should only result when all other efforts at peace have failed. Contrary to other RPGs, Holy Lands rewards respect, charity, and Christian apologetics from characters to their fellow men and women. Furthermore, in Holy Lands, the supernaturally evil demons are plentiful and offer a channel, quote-unquote, for allowing the skillful combat that has become commonplace in RPGs these days to take place. I think that's a really interesting take on kind of like an approach to doing a role-playing game from a Christian perspective. As I've mentioned in a video before, and I'll try to remember to put a link to it in the description below this video, I actually don't take the position that there are that it is inherently evil or inherently dangerous or corrupting or anything like that to play evil characters in a fantasy RPG, or to play characters that use sorcery and magic and stuff like that, you know. But I do think that there are specific times where, for personal reasons, a person is going to want to stay away from that kind of content. And that's absolutely valid and biblical to make that choice. And so I think having an alternative like this is really cool. What's interesting is that, you know, you might say to yourself, okay, well, how the heck do you still have the fun of the kind of like the, you know, the power fantasy that comes with role-playing games like this, where you get to be more capable and powerful than you normally are in life? I mean, that's like the big, that's the big draw, I think, to a lot of role-playing games. And I should add, I don't think there's anything, you know, that phrase power fantasy gets kind of a bad rap. I don't think there's anything wrong with the right perspective with having a power fantasy, because one day we will have resurrected bodies that will not be weak, they will not be breaking down, they will be strong and capable, and they will be invulnerable to any kind of harm or evil against it. So I think it can be a foretaste, a foreshadow of what we've been promised as those being rescued by Christ. So you might say to yourself, well, how can you enjoy the power fantasy if you can't have characters that are using magic? Well, their solution to that is to basically create character classes that function in the same ways as the, you know, the D&D type fantasy classes, like, you know, wizards and, you know, multi-class mages, fighters, stuff like that, you know, but to theme them differently. This game uses a system of faith where basically you... you have so many like faith points, as it were, that you can spend on doing miracles and things like that, depending on your character class, you know. So it doesn't require faith, you know, for the player to kind of exercise these miracles. In that way, it's exactly like a wizard. You have a certain reservoir of energy or, you know, resources that you have complete control over, not the game master, you know, or any other external person that you're relying on, which is the case in real life. We absolutely have to rely on God to perform miracles. We might pray for a miracle. We might really want a miracle. We might have absolute faith that God can do a miracle, and that miracle still won't happen. But there were certain people in biblical history. I'm thinking of say Moses and the staff that he was given. I'm thinking of Samson and the strength that he was given, that were given either objects or inherent abilities that they could basically use at will to bring about these, you know, miraculous kinds of things, you know. And so I don't think it's unbiblical to take that approach and have these character classes that are still pulling on kind of an internal reservoir of energy that they themselves have complete command on, you know. So it's, you know, it's an interesting kind of halfway point of figuring out, okay, how do we kind of give the same feeling of empowerment that RPGs give, and yet, as much as possible, try to, you know, reinforce the idea that we are dependent upon God. And, you know, can you do both perfectly? I'm not sure if that's the case, but I really do think this is a great, you know, crack at doing just that. It would be hard. I'm thinking about how would you do an RPG that you have characters that are constantly relying on God and they don't have, like, in their own stats, the ability to do these amazing things. It reminds me of the Wachowskis when they kind of talked about at the end of the Matrix Path of Neo video game, where before you get to the very end of it, in the trilogy, spoilers, okay, sorry for Matrix trilogy if you haven't seen it yet, but Neo sacrifices himself at the end of the third movie, you know, and it's very much kind of a Christ metaphor. And the Wachowskis come on when you get to that point in playing the Matrix Path of Neo, and they say, yeah, you know, at this point in the story, you might remember that Neo kind of sacrifices himself, and, you know, when you're doing like a philosophical, you know, story in a movie, that's really cool and meaningful, but when you're playing it in a video game, it's kind of, and the other one says, lame. You know? So it's not going to, so they recognize, you know, that when you're talking about player agency and giving them some kind of power fantasy, that there's some kind of adjustment that you have to make. It's based on the experience that the player is expecting. So I think this is a really cool shot at kind of trying to have your cake and eat it too, as it were, for the goals that they've set for themselves thematically, and then also the goals that they would want to set for themselves in terms of fun and empowerment for the players. So anyway, all that to say, I think this is a really interesting project, and if it sounds interesting to you, go check it out at holylandsrpg.com. And I want to say thank you also to the creators of the game, because I had some questions, you know, when I wanted to feature this, about like how the miracle system was going to work, how the rules were going to work, and how that would play out, that I couldn't get all that information from the website. And so they were gracious enough to give me a PDF copy of the game that I could look at, so that I could kind of share that with you and how they're approaching that. So anyway, once again, recommend that you check that out if you're into paper and pencil RPGs at holylandsrpg.com. And also I wanted to mention they've got this... they've got a YouTube channel with a nice cool set in the background where they kind of go through the rules of the game. And so if you want kind of an introduction without reading, you know, through a bunch of, you know, rules or the website or whatever like that, and just want to get up to speed on how the game works, they've got a really cool YouTube channel that you can find by going to their website at holylandsrpg.com. So anyway, very cool stuff, very cool resources, and I really like that set. That's cool. I want to thank Adam David Collings for the work he does every month with it's the science fiction, Christian science fiction and fantasy bulletin. That's always a good resource for me as I'm preparing this video each month. So go check out Adam Collings on YouTube. And then if you want to find more Christian geekery, we've got a resource at christiangeekcentral.com. You just go over to Portal, go down to Gateway, and then you can take your choice from there if you want to look at blogs and podcasts, video games, books and magazines, tabletop gaming, comics and animation, all kinds of stuff being done with excellence by Christian geeks online. And so that is a growing resource. I just added two author names to our page today, so that's something for you that you can check out over at christiangeekcentral.com. Thanks for watching. And hopefully I'll have more Christian Geek Radar for you next month.
Incoming transmission.
Kim Wiki of POS, TOS, and various other segments that she sent our way sent me a great email asking a clarifying question about the great backlog burning of 2017. She writes, "Hey, Peter, quick question about the 28 days sans entertainment spending challenge that you're encouraging people to try. Is that just no spending on media and activities, or does something like getting takeout count? I mean, it's not completely fun because you do need to eat something, but it's not completely utilitarian either. On the other hand, I don't think you meant that people should only buy the cheapest, most efficient, and basic things necessary to sustain life for 28 days. So is that a line you leave up to the individual's honor system, or do you have a house ruling on that, Kim?" Great question. I actually, I kind of laughed as I wrote her back and said, "I feel like you've kind of been inside my head a little bit," because when I was the thought of some of that. I thought of some of that while I was kind of cooking up the idea, because I like to treat myself to a donut at the gas station now and then, and that's even less, you know, utilitarian than like actually getting takeout, because it's not a meal. It's just like, hey, how can I feel good and get fatter? <You know? laughs> as far as I'm concerned, anything not explicitly stated in, you know, what I said about the 28 days and, you know, entertainment spending and stuff like that, it's up to your interpretation. I mean, I don't even know yet how I'm going to handle my 4 weeks. If I'm, I think I will probably still make a gas station trip every now and then. The real goal for me isn't that, you know, that folks get like a free download, or that they, you know, they really harass themselves and, you know, and don't do it, you know, anything fun or anything like that. You know, the real goal for me is that we gain some experience being disciplined with finances. In my mind, if we spend 28 days together or separately, however it works out, being more aware and conservative than usual with our spending, then that's a win. So yeah, it's up to your interpretation on the honor system. It's just entertainment spending, however you want to interpret that. Don't do any of that for 28 days. So anyway, great question, Kim. Thank you very much. Feedback, guys, feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we have to hear from you to do that. You can send me an email or audio file recorded on your phone to paeter@spiritblade.com. All right, well, let me just briefly pray for us in light of just some things that have come up in the prayer request section of the forums, and things that certainly I think a lot of you guys can relate to. Lord Jesus, we just right now bring up our work situations and specifically the people that can mistreat us in our work, that can overlook us, that can completely fail to appreciate our faithfulness and service. And we just admit that's hard. That's really hard. And we know that the opinions, the estimation, the appreciation of others, that really shouldn't be our fuel, that really we should serve others as though we're serving you. And yet, it's still really hard to just not be appreciated. And we don't know what to do with that. We pray that you would reveal something, Jesus, in your character, in how you dealt with the complete lack of appreciation of others, and far worse, the complete neglect and abandonment of any recognition of who you were. We pray that we would just see in your word something that would encourage us, something that would alter our perspective so that we can not be brought down by how others are treating us. And apart from that, Jesus, there are just practical things. There's just instability and insecurity and just bad work situations that can result from those who are in authority over us, who abuse their authority or are inconsiderate in how they carry out their exercise their authority. We just pray that you would give us strength and endurance, and again, the right perspective. Would you prevent us from becoming discouraged, and help us remember that you are ultimately in control? Would you help us to not become bitter, but to see in these people brokenness that needs your healing, that needs your rescue, that needs your correction, that needs all of those things. And we pray that we would just first heal and recover from our own wounds and all that, and then have the strength and energy to consider how you want to use us in the lives of those that we work with, that are either working alongside us or over us or underneath our supervision. So, God, we just put all of our work situations in front of you, and the people that we work with, and all the complications that come with that, and we pray that we would be open to how you want to work and change and stretch and grow us, and we also plead with you to do the same in those that we work with. In your name we pray. Amen. As a reminder, guys, if you would like some help finding a local Bible teaching, truth seeking church in your area, please email me at paeter@spiritblade.com. I would really be happy to help you with that. Stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God allows it, I'm going to be talking a whole bunch about E3, the big video game event. Once every year, where all the studios and the companies, they come out and they talk about all their plans and all the things that they say they're going to do that they are not going to do, really. it's going to be interesting. It's always interesting. You know, I mentioned during my wish list that, you know, I think I'm getting better as years pass at picking up some tips, some notes to myself to help me enjoy E3 better, and just enjoy it for the fun that it is, for the celebration of gaming that it is, but to not count on it to bring me fulfillment and happiness and you know, that kind of stuff. And yet there's still kind of a fun game about it of like, oh my gosh, what are they going to announce? And how crazy, audacious, and whatever will these promises be? Who knows if they're going to be fulfilled down the line? But it's still fun to think about, okay, what are they going to be shooting for? You know? So for those of you that like video games, whether like hardcore or casually, I hope that you'll enjoy my reactions to all the announcements and promises that are going to be made in the world of video games next week. There's a lot of programming going on. I put something in the forums. I think it's in the What's on Your Brain section of the forums at ChristianGeekCentral.com, where I just said like E3 is on my brain, and then I put like a schedule of the press conferences. But they're starting a new thing this year for 2 days. It runs, I think, on Tuesday and Wednesday. Yeah, Tuesday and Wednesday. And it's like all day long live streaming, this thing called like the E3 Coliseum, where they're going to be like, you know, it's more like stage show type stuff, I think, where they're bringing out, you know, game creators for announcements of things, but also just to kind of talk about, you know, non-time sensitive, non-announcement stuff, just game industry stuff, like the theory of game design. And like, they've got Neil deGrasse, I'm not sure if you say his name deGrasse or deGrassi. I'll just say Neil deGrasse Tyson. But he's like this astrophysicist that kind of makes the rounds on talk shows and stuff, and to the point where I wonder if he's keeping up with research at all. I mean, he was one of the talk. Anytime like someone appears as talking head as themselves in a movie, even once, I'm like, you're losing just a little bit of credibility. If you do it twice, then it's like, oh man. I think I've only seen him do that once in a movie, maybe twice. I can't remember if he was in both Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman. But anyway, he's pretty well known for being a strong naturalist, a strong atheist, and being very dismissive of theism in a way that not quite as harsh as, like, say, Dawkins, who's just like, ugh, he's just a bitter guy. But he's very, you know, dismissive and has kind of a superior, dismissive, chuckling, you know, tone. And so I'm like, huh. You know, he's becoming a more popular voice in geek entertainment, you know, in geek, various forms of geek media. And so the fact that he's like here and talking about like world building in like open world type games, it's just interesting again to see like, okay, this guy is officially an influencer in the geek world. So I'll be very interested in what he has to say. But I mean, I spent a lot of time talking about that. There's all kinds of other stuff that's going to be going on. So like, there's going to be a lot for me to potentially react to. I'm not sure what my pace of video production is going to be. It could be as much as like one video every day next week. I'm just not sure. So stay tuned if you want to like get my more timely reactions to various press conferences and announcements and stuff like that. Stay tuned to youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. And I think as long as I don't, you know, I usually do, unless I get caught up in the flurry and completely, you know, forget. But I usually, right after posting there, also post it to ChristianGeekCentral.com. So you ought to be able to find it there. But man, as I look at the week ahead of me, this seems so crazy and mammoth. I'm going to be so busy, like, all week. I'm thinking there might be some late nights coming. I'm not sure. But yeah, we'll see. Anyway, So yeah, that's what my plan is for next week, if God allows any of that. Till then, check out spiritblade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you guys. Thank you so much for listening to this show. And I was just thinking earlier today, I think as I was driving around, I was like, it's just weird to think that there are people out there that are making, you know, this show and my voice and my blabbing just kind of a regular part of their routine. And I don't want to take that for granted, guys. That's really weird, and it's special, and I'm grateful that there's content being created here that God is using to be useful enough to you that you want to return to it. So thank you very much for doing that and returning to this show however often you do. I hope you have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Fremson with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Something's coming through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
And that was Distant Voices, another Bashir episode. And a pretty good one.
Yeah, it's really trippy. It's one of those surreal...
Yeah, it's a nice, like, alternate kind of a story. There's a twist halfway through, and I don't know how to talk about this without giving away the twist, so I'll just say, if you want to see this episode and not have the twist revealed, definitely check this episode out. You'll learn some things about Bashir that's very good, and check it out. And now stop listening now, because we're going to give this twist away if you don't want to know.
All right, spoilers coming.
Three, two, one. Okay, we find out halfway through. Now, what happens at the very beginning is Bashir is upset because he's turning 30. And then a new alien that we've never heard of before called a Lethian comes up. And we soon find out Lethians have mind powers. We know this because after Bashir won't give him some, like, really powerful drug... he breaks into...
He zaps him with brain lightning!
Yes, brain lightning. And next thing you know is Bashir wakes up and the station is in ruins. And again, about halfway through we find out this is actually... He's in a coma and this is him in his mind. It's been done before. This is basically Star Trek doing Inside Out from Pixar. And there's a weak point near that point where he runs into the various parts of his personality and they're represented by the different characters on the ship. And it goes on a little too long, and it's very blunt. It just says, you represent this, you represent that.
Because all you idiots watching in the peanut gallery won't get it unless we state it right out for you
multiple times. It's not enough to just say, oh, well, you must be parts of my personality, and leave it at that. No, we have to know who is what part, and we can't just figure it out or leave it to a mystery. You know, make it a little more esoteric and vague. No, none of that. But still, that's a weak part. But that's once they get past that, it's basically Bashir going through and trying to figure out how to fix his mind. And
the whole time he's getting rapidly older and older.
And excellent, excellent makeup.
The makeup
in this episode
is great, yeah.
He really does look like he is turning 60, 70, 80.
And I love, towards the end there, we were both joking about, he started to go kind of Yoda.
Yeah.
Little noises. But he was also starting to look very much like the Emperor.
Yes.
Which is ironic because he's not the guy with the brain lightning.
but he got the brain lightning. But and there's some interesting little twists. And most importantly, we learned a lot about Bashir's backstory. And this is another one of those episodes that we've talked about before where there's a major thing that will come up in season 5 that completely redefines Bashir's character. It's a secret he's been having all along. And it's revealed in season 5. And they clearly didn't know about it now, But everything about that secret fits so well into this.
They will weave things from this episode into that. It'll make so much more sense.
It's a good episode if you don't know that. But once you know this thing about Bashir in the future, and then you watch this episode again, it like everything makes so much more sense. I would actually, if I had not known that they said we did not plan this from the beginning, I would think they had planned this twist from the beginning with all these hints they put in there.
Well, and it's a fun episode, like you said. The makeup is good.
His acting is great because he starts acting old. And he's not just going the cliche. Yeah. Then he's going, oh, get off my lawn.
The acting's good.
You can make lots of riff jokes.
There's wonderful, surreal trippiness going on.
Just watching a 100-year-old man wearing a birthday cone on his head.
Yeah, wearing a birthday cone hat and being pelted by tennis balls. What is even?
David Lynch's Inner Space.
Yes.
And, there's not much to say because it's just a good episode. Definitely check it out. And it's a good sign of just how Bashir has grown as a character.
Yeah.
Is he can carry an entire episode and be very good with it. And I think of other annoying characters in Star Trek, and Deep Space Nine is really the only one who's taken their most obnoxious, most hated character and turned them into a fan favorite, just by writing them well.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't do any tricks in it, because by the time they do the big surprise twist to his character, he's already gained the respect of the fans. By this point, he already has. So it's not like they suddenly redefine the character and suddenly he's different. And, it's just, I think of Neelix, I think of Wesley, I think of Chekhov.
They toned down the more annoying aspects, and they had him get some experience.
Yeah.
They had him learn from his mistakes.
Which is good, because his main role at the beginning was the new guy who didn't know everything. So, it's kind of like the old joke I've heard, if you leave a fish out of water too long, it starts to stink. So they didn't make him a fish out of water for too long.
Yeah, they didn't do the...
They didn't stay with it.
They didn't do the Harry Kim forever an ensign with him.
And that's just it. It's like Harry Kim and Voyager, except Harry Kim, even in the last season of Voyager, they were doing episodes about Harry Kim learns this new lesson all the others already went through. And it's like, oh, good Lord, would you get over that and let him be something other than the new guy? Especially on a ship where nothing's changing. You know, you don't have new people coming in and leaving and all. It's like, oh my gosh, that's just... I could go on forever about the wasted opportunities of Voyager, but we're talking about Deep Space Nine, and this was a good episode. Definitely worth checking out.
The opportunities that they did and should have taken,
yes. And that's just it. DS9, it highlights... I keep going back to Voyager and its failure because Deep Space Nine is what Voyager could have been. And Voyager could have been even better.
It's almost like their tagline should be, Deep Space Nine. Yeah, we'll go there, even though we're the one that doesn't move.
Yeah, and that really is. And they have growth and change, and it's not the same. It's not the same as what it used to be. That's Star Trek at its best, is about growth and change. And, that's why I love Deep Space Nine so much. I mean, I love that they'll go to war, and I love that they're respectful of religion and things like that, things that are very unlike typical Star Trek. But more than anything is I love the fact that they will actually change. They don't say, oh, well, the fans like this, so we never change this, or else the fans won't like it. I think of DC Comics is doing that, where they're doing the opposite, where they want to just make everything into Batman. Because fans like Batman. And it's like, you're ruining things when you let the crowds dictate your storytelling. You decide the story you tell, and tell it. And let them decide if they like it or not. Don't let them tell you what story to tell. And this really is a testament to when real storytellers get behind a show. And there have been lots of other story series like that, don't get me wrong. By no means is Deep Space Nine unique, but that's why I think it's the best Star Trek of all. And I say that because there's really not much more to this episode, because all it is enjoying the journey with Bashir and getting to know the man.
It's a delightfully surreal journey into a man's mind, and with some Sith lightning, tennis balls, and cranky old people.
Yep.
So what more do you want?
You got cranky old people and birthday parties. So anyway, we'll see you next time when we're going back to the Mirror Universe.